Environment Matters, sponsored by Wuka Period Pants, the reusable menstrual underwear that completely replaces disposables. Find out more at wuka.co.uk and join the revolution.
Welcome to Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around St Albans and from further afield. Now, last week we saw the end of the first St Albans Sustainability Festival with a whole range of well-attended events. Now, one of those events was a speaker meeting hosted by St Albans Green Party, at which UK Green Party co-leader Jonathan Bartley spoke to an enthusiastic audience. Jonathan took a break in his busy schedule to pop into the Radio Verulam studio and have a chat with me. Let's see what he had to say. Jonathan, thank you very much indeed for joining me. So Extinction Rebellion, who've brought climate change dramatically into the headlines, they don't think that the current political system in the UK is up to tackling climate change. They've said that we need a citizens' assembly to oversee the process. What do you think? Is our current political system up to the job?
I don't think it is, or not as good as it should be. When you look at the adversarial nature of the House of Commons, you know, it's not set up to collaboratively work together to solve a big crisis. You know, it's set up very much for two sides to go at each other very, very hard. It becomes, you know, a focus on elections rather than what happens between elections. And for me, democracy is what happens between elections. It, you know, our involvement as citizens in the democratic process, it shouldn't just be about turning out at a general election every 5 years or for local elections. So we are very, very supportive of the idea of citizens' assemblies. We'd like to see it happen, you know, at the local authority level, participatory budgeting, for example, when a council sets its budget. And why not involve those people in the local community in determining their priorities for the spending of the local authority? We need a big devolution of power down to people.
Okay. I mean, one of the problems with that might be that it could be said, I think probably quite a lot of people are saying, that if we are going to tackle problems like climate change, then we are going to have to give up things, aren't we? Life can't really continue quite like it is. So if we were to have a citizens' assembly, do you think that we would be able to engage people? Would we get popular support for the kind of changes that we need?
The first thing to recognise is if people aren't involved between elections, who is it that calls the shots? It's the big vested interests, it's the big corporate interests, the ones that are spending millions and millions of pounds on lobbying MPs, on sometimes donating money to political parties. There are big multinational companies that have a very huge interest in maintaining fossil fuels and making money out of them. And so those are the people who are exerting undue influence. It's about, taking that power away from them and putting it back in the hands of the people. But in terms of, is it about us all wearing hair shirts? Is it about spending tens and tens of billions of additional money? I think it's fundamentally about making the right choices. And let me give you some examples. Why are we going to spend £56 billion on HS2? Now, £56 billion, that's half the entire NHS budget. And this is all public money, no private money. You and me, we're paying for it. On shaving off 20 minutes from Birmingham to London and destroying 100 ancient woodlands and massive swathes of countryside being concreted over, destroying the biodiversity. When we could spend that on, let me tell you what that could be spent on, 114 towns and cities each getting £500 million each. Do the maths for yourself. We could revolutionise our local transport infrastructure. Imagine it. Buses, bus routes, that have been taken away from us, reinstated. Cheap fares and transport, accessible transport for those who are older or maybe have mobility issues. Tube stations in London that suddenly aren't packed out but actually can carry everyone. You know, if we want to get people out of their cars, you can't just beat them over the head. We've got to give them, alternatives for the school run, alternatives for the shopping, alternatives for the commute into work that actually do work for people. So it's about making the right choices.
Okay, but things like, for instance, flying obviously contributes. It's a very high carbon thing to do. Are people going to be prepared to give up luxuries like flying?
Well, again, let's dig down into the detail. Let's be evidence based. The Department for Transport says very, very clearly that astonishing 70% of the flights that are taken are taken by 15% of the people. Let me repeat that. 70% of the flights that are taken by just 15% of us. So we're talking about people that take 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 flights a year that are the bulk of the flights that are being taken. And what we're saying is you don't have to take away, you know, the family holiday for those that fly once a year. Introduce a frequent flyer levy where if you take 3, 4, 5 flights a year, you are paying progressively more, both to deter the demand, but also to make actually the price realistic, because every time you take multiple flights, you are damaging our climate. You are imposing a cost on everyone else by the carbon emissions that we are going to have to pay dearly for. So they should be paying up front the money. And we can put that into climate mitigation, or we can put that into, you know, whatever it might need. Aviation gets also a massive, massive subsidy. You know, the true cost of aviation is not appreciated. It doesn't pay VAT on aviation fuel. And it gets this massive 17.5% exemption. You know, I mean, that you know, and something that's so destructive, it doesn't make sense. So it's just about paying for what you're doing and also recognising who it is that's imposing this massive, massive carbon burden on us.
Okay. So that's one kind of economic change. Now, you studied at the LSE. What other kind of changes do you think we need with our economic system to mean that it can fit in with the environmental challenges that face us?
Well, when I was, so I'm 47, right? And I was born in 1971. And we were sold this vision of a future where we were going to treble the size of the economy, three times the amount of wealth we were going to have. We were going to have this technological revolution. That means we could all work shorter, you know, hours. And we were going to discover this source of endless renewable energy. Well, let me tell you what's happened. We have trebled the economy. The population hasn't gone up three times the size, but we are three times richer. We have had that massive technological revolution that's revolutionized the way we live. And we have discovered that endless source of renewable energy in terms of the wind, solar, tidal. But what have we seen instead of that utopia? We've seen a very, very rich 1%. We've seen a massive, colossal destruction of the environment where we're, you know, facing an existential crisis. And we're seeing, you know, rampant inequality, and we're all working longer hours, not shorter hours. So we're saying, let's ask who the economy is for, fundamentally. Let's bring it back to basics. And that old industrial model of the economy, you know, it clearly isn't working. We've seen these financial crises, and we will continue to lurch from one economic crisis to another until we start to ask that fundamental question. So let's have the redistribution of the wealth that's been created back to those that need it. Let's harness the power of technology. We can work a four-day week rather than a five-day week. We don't have to consume at the same levels that we can. We can create resilient local economies that can withstand the winds of globalization. We can completely reimagine, you know, the way we live, the way we work, the way we produce. Let's incentivize through the tax system the stuff that is good, and let's penalise the stuff that's bad. You know, so when you've got plastics, you know, why are you not imposing a tax on plastics and then a subsidy for those things that are alternatives to plastics? It makes sense for us. And, you know, you can change behaviours. You can change the very way we live.
OK. Now, in spite of what we voted for here in St Albans, the country voted to leave the EU. Unfortunately, environmental problems stretch rather further than our shores. Do you think the UK can effectively put a halt to climate change or act effectively on climate change from outside the EU?
Certainly nowhere near as effectively, and that's why we're campaigning very, very hard to remain in the EU. The Green Party wants us to stay in the European Union because we believe that there are issues that are bigger than Brexit. And they demand an international response, a collaborative response. I believe we're at a crossroads as a country. We can either turn in on ourselves, we can put up great big walls, we can become a little tax haven floating off the continent of Europe, or we can open wide our arms to the rest of the world, build those bridges, take the action that we need to take. You know, climate change doesn't stop at the border. Air pollution doesn't stop at the border. We've got to have that international cooperation in order to achieve what we need to achieve. And you look at the record of the European Union, you know, on environmental standards, it's been phenomenal. I mean, take you know, the air, the dirty air that we believe now that we breathe. I know right here in St Albans, we are currently breaking European law. You know, it is at dangerous levels, the air pollution on our streets. But this government that we have in the UK has been dragged through the courts three times and been found guilty of not meeting at the European air quality standards. Now, any idea that somehow this government is going to have a Damascus experience and change its ways because it's somehow outside of Europe, because it's not being held account any longer for our dirty air, our dirty water, for the action on climate change that we need, I think is absolutely absurd. And we know that a lot of the Conservative Party it contains climate change deniers, not just those who are complacent about climate change, but those who deny that it is existing. We don't want those people running the country independent of checks and balances that Europe provides.
Indeed. I suppose the other side of the coin, though, are we fooling ourselves if we think that a country as small as the UK really can have any effect on problems as big as climate change? Is what anything that we do basically ineffectual here?
Of course, it varies a little bit, but we're the fifth or sixth richest economy in the world. Historically, we've emitted about as much carbon as most other people, certainly when you take the long view. Having benefited hugely from the wealth produced by industrialization, there was a great toll on the rest of the world. So, we do have a carbon debt, which we should be delivering. The government is currently not on track to meet its climate change commitments. And don't let anyone tell you that it is. Read the Committee on Climate Change report. It's going to miss its carbon budgets. But I think more than that, every action that we take in this country, because we are a major player in the world, has a massive effect on the rest of the world. Take airport expansion. If we expand Heathrow, what are other countries going to do? They're going to expand their airports because they've got to compete with our airport. And so you set off a race to the bottom, of airport expansion in a kind of new arms race. Look at what the government did in this country over removing the feed-in tariffs to solar panels. Pulled the rug from under the solar industry, a thriving solar industry. We could have been exporting that technology cheaply around the world, being great for UK business, providing clean, cheap, renewable energy, and benefiting the rest of the world by our actions here. We are not, we may be physically an island, but, as a country, we are not isolated. We are all connected.
Okay. So just finally, if I could just ask you, you co-founded the religious think tank Ecclesia, and religion appears to play quite a part in your life. Do you think that religious organisations should be showing more leadership on environmental issues?
Yes, I do. Absolutely, I do. So when I was part of that think tank, we produced a lot of reports that highlighted the Church of England's investments. And we urge them to divest from fossil fuels. They have a vast amount of wealth, have a very big pension fund. I think it's about £6 billion. It's eye-watering money. And urge them to use that leverage to shift out of fossil fuels into cleaner energy, cleaner shareholdings and businesses.
To be fair to them, I think that their idea is that they retain those holdings so that they can sort of act from within, forcing improved standards.
Yeah, I mean, I think the difficulty with that argument is when you're dealing with massive, massive financial institutions, that kind of, I don't know how much it is, a few hundred million that you might have in BP isn't going to actually have a major, major effect on that particular company. But if you shift out, other people start to notice what you're doing. And you know how markets work. They are very much about momentum, they're about changes, about people seeing that the way the tide is moving. And I think they could have sent a very, very good signal. And I think they are starting to do that now. We've seen these battles with the Church of England. The Bishop of Oxford had to take the Church of England to court over not investing in apartheid. Do you remember back in the day?
Yeah, yeah.
And then there was the battle over whether the Church of England should be invested in arms companies. And that battle was won. And then now the battle on climate change has been won. But it's more than just the Church of England's investments. It's about what religious people say. And, it's good to see the Pope speaking out about climate change more.
Yes, that feels more like leadership, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I would like to see, a stronger line. The former Archbishop of Canterbury has endorsed one of the Green candidates in the European elections. That's great. they're coming out. But, the time has really come to pick a side. You can't... Some religions like to be all things to all people, and they can be mealy-mouthed, and it is not the time. It's time to have the courage of your convictions and stand up for what you believe in.
On that, thank you, Jonathan Bartley. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
And I was talking there to Jonathan Bartley, co-leader of the Green Party. Great to speak to him always pleased to hear from politicians from all parties. Now, in local politics, following the local elections at the start of May, Lib Dem Chris White is now leader of St Albans District Council and has also taken on the environment portfolio, indicating that he wants us to see a step change in action on reducing our greenhouse gas emissions and action on other environmental issues. I'm looking forward to keeping you updated on progress. Now, a big thank you to Peter, Tiffany and the rest of you who've said how much you enjoyed the hour-long Sustainable Stories programme that I did for the Sustainability Festival. It's the touching stories of why you care about the environment, and it features a whole range of fantastic people. If you missed the show, you can still listen to it by going to the podcast page of the Radio Verulam website. And you might also be interested in hearing the parent show from the 23rd of May, when they heard from some fabulous local school children about what they're doing to help the environment and had some advice from a psychologist about how to help a child who's overwhelmed by concern about the environment. Now, if you heard last week's show, you'll know that we're now into the Wildlife Trust's 30 Days Wild. Now, I've been tweeting some of my random acts of wildness, and it's been fun so far. But each Wednesday during June, the Hearts Middlesex Wildlife Trust are challenging us to take part in the Wild Wednesday Challenge. Now, there'll be a different theme for each week, and we can challenge other people to do it, perhaps the kids, your mum, your workmates, or challenge yourself. Now, this week's challenge is to see the wild. Go out and see something wild. Now, we're free to do whatever we like, interpret it as we will. They don't want to be restrictive, just give us some inspiration to engage with wildlife a little bit more. Do take a look at HMWT Badger. That's the Twitter handle for Hearts Middlesex Wildlife Trust. They've got videos and stuff on there. And anyway, Frida from the Wildlife Trust, if you're listening, I have performed to take part in the challenge. I've been watching out for a little baby robin who's been bathing in the pond outside my window. Just fantastic, joyful, mindful, lovely. So yeah, fully recommended as well. So rise to the Wild Wednesday Challenge and go and see some nature. Now, I'll be back at the same time next week when we'll be hearing about how local retirees are doing great things for the Rivoli. Until then, thank you for listening.
Environment Matters, sponsored by Wooka Period Pants, the reusable menstrual underwear that completely replaces disposables. Find out more at wooka.co.uk and join the revolution.